Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Episode 251 for the love of the game on the Believe Podcast Network is brought to you by Bet Online, your number one source for all your summer sports betting this season, whether it's Major League Baseball, golf, NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs. Again, I said that this is my favorite time of the year. You can find everything you need, whether it's the latest stats, news, scores, odds, lines, whatever you need. You can find it over at BetOnline. Head to the website or use your mobile device and get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. With that said, episode 251 for the love of the game. Let's get this work.
I got 100 guns, 100 clips. I'm from New York. I got a semi-automatic that spits next time if you talk. I got 100 guns, 100 clips. I'm from New York. I got a semi-automatic that spits next time if you talk. And I know y'all niggas is Punani, your monologues getting tired. Now it's time to ride. Apprentice, you fired. You're no longer desired. So take off them silly chains. Put back
all on right, we are back. Episode 251 for the love of the game on the Bleep Podcast Network with yours truly, ATH. It's Aaron Tobin Hess back in the saddle, back behind the mic. And we are here. We are at my favorite time of the year. I've said it before. I'll say it again. We are at my favorite time of the year. The NBA playoffs are upon us. As the time of the recording, we're coming to you on a Tuesday afternoon. The play-in games start tonight. We got Lakers and the New Orleans Pelicans first up tonight to see who's the seventh seed. We've got Sacramento and Golden State to see who would play the loser of that first game to be the eighth seed. Then tomorrow night, we've got Philly against Miami, Chicago against Atlanta. Other than that, the playoff matchups are pretty much set. My New York Knicks, who we are going to talk a lot about, got the 2 seed in the Eastern Conference, and they are awaiting to see who they play in the first round. And it was just a great weekend in sports. Obviously, you know, outside the NBA, which the NBA got it right. The fact that they were able to space out the games, everybody play Friday night, everybody play Sunday, because the last game of the season had a tremendous amount of weight in terms of what the seeding was going to be, what the matchups were going to be. And the intrigue was there. Teams weren't able to see if they could shuffle their guys in and out of the lineup to try and mess with the standings, to try and mess with the matchups. That was great. But outside the NBA, you had the Masters, Scottie Scheffler, dominated the Masters. Congratulations to him on another Masters title. He was absolutely tremendous. We had NHL down the stretch of the regular season. We're going to talk a little bit about the Rangers later, but they had a monster come from behind win recently against the Islanders. They had a great win last night to clinch the President's Trophy. It was awesome, but we're going to do a lot of NBA in this segment. A lot of NBA, because let's face it, it's my bread and butter. So I want to start off with a couple of things outside of the New York Knicks and a couple of takeaways from the last weekend in the NBA season. And I'm going to start here. The Phoenix Suns, a team that I really don't have a lot of faith in, But credit to them, they had a gauntlet of a schedule down the stretch. They were 7-3 in their last 10. They've won 3 in a row, and they avoided the play-in game. And the way it broke out, Minnesota, a team that they've handled all year, they get them in the first round. And they, to me, were the big winners of the weekend, because Minnesota is a team that likes to play a lot of drop coverage. What does the Phoenix Suns do best on offense? They are excellent mid-range shooters. And the mid-range game and being lethal from that area basically is the best way to negate drop coverage and what Rudy Gobert does best. So to me, it was a major win for the Phoenix Suns. They were the big winners of the weekend. The second big winners of the weekend were, let's face it, the Oklahoma City Thunder, a team that average age is 23 years old. They got the one seed. And I know that there was a lot of talk about, if you're the Lakers, do you try and lose intentionally in the play-in game to move down and have a one-game playoff to basically play the Oklahoma City Thunder as opposed to playing the Denver Nuggets? Like, that is so incredibly disrespectful to the Oklahoma City Thunder. And I know that the Lakers played the Thunder well this season, but that is so incredibly disrespectful. I still think if it's the Lakers and the Thunder, and again, it is yet to be seen, I still think the Thunder are going to win that series. The Oklahoma City Thunder proved all year what kind of team they are, and I think they're being criminally slept on. The Denver Nuggets had a chance to take the one seed. They blew it in losing to San Antonio on Friday night this past weekend. And yeah, the Nuggets didn't necessarily play great down the stretch, but a part of that was because Victor Wembanyama went absolutely nuclear in that game. I mean, we've said it before, but he's so, so good. But yeah, the Nuggets getting the two seed, I'm not sure they're really concerned about it, but yeah, they're just, they had a chance to get the one seed and they didn't come through. The New York Knicks, my New York Knicks, after seeing Giannis go down with an injury to his calf, which caused him to sit out the remaining 3 games of the regular season, plus, as reported by Woj, probably at least half of the first round against the Indiana Pacers. So they fell down to 3. Ideally, we wanted the Knicks to be 3, but because of the situation in Milwaukee not been playing great down the stretch anyway, it was going to be hard to see the Knicks really ensure that they get to 3. But the Knicks had an opportunity to do so. They had a game Sunday against a pesky Chicago Bulls team. The Chicago Bulls are basically like the best bad team, maybe in NBA history. And that game was down to the wire, goes into overtime. At that point, we had already seen that the Indiana Pacers blew out the Hawks, who are an absolute dumpster fire. They scored 150 points on the Hawks. I can't get rid of the Hawks fast enough from this season. And the Knicks had an opportunity to go into overtime, pull all their starters and have a bunch of reserves play, and basically ensure that they would basically kind of throw the game where they would be the 3 seed, where they would face the Indiana Pacers. But no, the Knicks said, screw it. We want home court. We don't care who we play, whether it's Philadelphia, whether it's Miami. We don't care. We want home court in the second round and bring all the smoke. We're not ducking Joel Embiid. We're not ducking playoff Jimmy Butler. And while I was in the camp that I wanted the Knicks to kind of lose that game, full send. You know what? Screw that. All right. The Knicks aren't running scared. Not running scared from anybody. This is a team that when OG Anunoby's in the lineup, they're 20-3 in those 23 games, and he has a positive plus-minus in every game that he's played. So this Knicks team, yeah, they played their guys a lot of minutes, and we'll get to Jalen Brunson in a second, but this team isn't scared. They're not scared of anybody, whether it's Philadelphia, whether it's playoff Miami, even though I'm scared of this Miami team, but the Knicks don't have that mentality. Whether it's the Boston Celtics, the big bad Boston Celtics, who the Knicks absolutely smacked this past Thursday night by 30 points, basically. I know they pulled their starters at the end of the game in the fourth quarter, the entire fourth quarter. They only won by 9. And for all those who are saying the Celtics didn't try, I mean, they're picking up Jalen Brunson 90 feet from the basket, and he still put a whooping on their ass. We're not scared of the Boston Celtics. Even though, again, I wanted them to be the 3 seed, I kind of like their mentality and the fight that they showed. And for a team that had injuries most of the year, for them to win 50 games and get a 2 seed is pretty remarkable. On the other end of the spectrum, you had the Cleveland Cavaliers, who were up 10 points in the fourth quarter against the Charlotte Hornets, completely punted that game and ended up losing by 10, which, if you're Adam Silver, you just have to be pulling your hair out for what they did. Now, again, it's never going to be perfect in terms of guys trying the last day of the season, but it is what it is. Maybe karma will come back to bite the Cleveland Cavaliers in the ass when they play the Orlando Magic in the first round. That will be the 4-5 matchup in the East, will be remain to be seen. So what we do know so far, Boston and the Knicks are waiting to see who they're playing, as they are the number 1 and number 2 seeds in the East. Oklahoma City and Denver, same thing in the West. As for Milwaukee and Indiana, where am I leaning in terms of picking games? If Giannis is going to play most of this series, I know Indiana didn't have Siakam, and even still, most of the year, they have handled the Milwaukee Bucks. I'd still lean Milwaukee, but I don't feel great about it. I will give my official predictions on another medium, but I'm leaning Milwaukee. I'm leaning Cleveland, even though they've been really crappy lately. I just think they have the best player of the series in Donovan Mitchell. And for two teams who are offensively challenged, I think Cleveland has the opportunity to be less offensively challenged. As for the Western Conference, Minnesota and Phoenix. I know that Phoenix has handled the Timberwolves all year. I know that this really broke right for Phoenix, but I think everybody is going to pick Phoenix. And I just think that Minnesota may be able to do some different things than they did in the regular season. So I'm going to kind of fade the public here and take Minnesota, even though I don't feel great about it. As for the Clippers and the Mavericks, two teams that I absolutely despise, I'm going to take the Dallas Mavericks in that one. And it's going to be fascinating. So the playoff matchups are going to be great. Play-in tournament games are going to be great, minus Chicago-Atlanta. I have no interest in watching that game. I hope Chicago smokes Atlanta, because I can't stand the Atlanta Hawks. And it's going to be awesome. NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, to me, this is the best time of the year. And one last thing before we bring on a recurring guest now to talk a little bit about the Knicks and a little bit about the Rangers. I do want to give Jalen Brunson some major props here. Because, again, I'm on record saying I was in the camp that it wasn't going to be the greatest signing ever for the New York Knicks. And it turns out that Jalen Brunson may be the best free agent signing in the history of the franchise. Brunson finishes the year averaging 28.7 points a game, which is fourth in the league. 6.5 assists a game. Shot basically 48% from the field, 40% from three. He's one of three guys in NBA history to put up those kinds of numbers. The other two are Steph Curry and Larry Bird. And in the seasons when they did that, both those guys won MVP. Now, Jalen Brunson's not going to win MVP, but he damn well better be top five finisher in MVP, and he better be first team all NBA. In a year where they're going away from the guard forward center format for all NBA, Jalen Brunson for what he did this whole year with OG Anunoby missing tons of time, with Randall missing tons of time, Jalen Brunson should be first team all NBA. I have a sneaky suspicion that Jason Tatum is going to be first team all NBA over Jalen Brunson, but that's ridiculous. And right now, heads up, who's a more dangerous player in the playoffs? To me, it's Jalen Brunson, and I'm not sure it's particularly close. I haven't been this wrong about a sports prediction in a long time, and Jalen Brunson made me eat my words when they signed him and then some. I mean, what a season for him. What a season for Jalen Brunson, and what a fun Knicks season. The most fun Knicks season of the last 20 years. And I really liked the 2013 team. I really did. But there's something about this team, the cohesion, whether it's the Villanova boys reunited and doing their damn thing in the NBA as they did in college. I just love this season. I love Isaiah Hartenstein. I love Deuce McBride coming on. I just love this team. I love this team. And while they could easily be in a playoff series where they may not have the best player in the series, that would be the case with Joel Embiid. I don't care. I don't care. Bring on whoever. Let's ride New York Knicks. I could see this team making the finals. I really could. Now, could they lose in round one? Yes. But I'm way more confident in them making a deep playoff run than I was even on Sunday. It's just a fantastic team. And kudos to Tom Thibodeau. I've called him a high floor, low ceiling coach. I still think he has some limitations, but those fears are going away. I think he's evolved this season in terms of being more flexible. I've been ultra, ultra impressed. I can't say enough good things about this New York Knicks team. And we're going to talk more about them and about the New York Rangers, who it's still to be determined who they play in the first round after winning the President's Cup. One last thing before we bring on our recurring guest to talk about the Knicks and the Rangers. Almost forgot. So the NBA season is over, and I wanted to announce my awards ballots for all the different awards. I don't have a vote yet. I probably should have a vote. If you listen to this podcast, you know I should have a vote. So let's start with the MVP in order. I have Jokic winning the MVP, Luka second, SGA third, Giannis Antetokounmpo fourth, Jalen Brunson of my New York Knicks finishing fifth. Rookie of the Year, Victor Wembanyama winning, Chet Holmgren second, Brandon Miller third. Defensive Player of the Year, I have Victor Wembanyama winning, Rudy Gobert second, Anthony Davis third. I just think if you watch what Wemby was doing and guys just legitimately running away from him on drives to the basket, I know what the San Antonio Spurs record is, but the numbers with Wembanyama on the floor are incredible, even defensively. So I have him winning the award for Defensive Player of the Year. Sixth man, Naz Reid, I have him winning it. Malik Monk coming in second. He probably would have won it if had he not gotten injured. He was slumping a little bit towards the end. And I have Bobby Portis finishing third. Coach of the Year, Mark Daigneault of the Oklahoma City Thunder winning. The fact that they're the number one seed is incredibly impressive. I have New York's own Tom Thibodeau finishing second and Orlando's Jamal Mosley finishing third. Most improved player, I really don't have an opinion. I'll just say Coby White finishing first, Tyrese Maxey finishing second, and I know he wasn't eligible for some reason, but Dante DiVincenzo finishing third. All NBA teams, and again, this year the NBA is doing away with the guard, forward, center alignment. So with that said, I'm going to try and keep the center position alive with this. I just think, you know, it should resemble a basketball team. I know Bill Simmons has been on this for a while, and I agree with him. So my first team, Luka, SGA, Jokic, Giannis, and Brunson. Jalen Brunson deserves first team All-NBA for what he's done. And I know a lot of people are probably going to vote Jason Tatum, but that's nonsense. Brunson deserves first team All-NBA. So basically, my top five in MVP voting is first team All-NBA. Second team, Jason Tatum, Anthony Edwards, Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant, and Anthony Davis. And third team, I have Steph Curry, Devin Booker, LeBron James, sadly, Paul George, and I'm going to put Domantas Sabonis on third team All-NBA. He had the most double-doubles in the league. He set the record for double-doubles, consecutive double-doubles. Like, that guy gets no love, and he should have been an all-star this year over Karl Anthony Towns. I put him on there just above Victor Wembanyama, and the other tough cut was Jaylen Brown. So those are my awards ballots and all NBA teams. With that said, we will bring on our recurring guest to talk New York sports in just a matter of moments. So we're here. O.J. Simpson passed away 30 years ago. The Bronco chase, 1994. You know what else was going on in 1994? The Rangers run the President's Cup. The New York Knicks were the number two seed. And right now, as it stands, the Rangers won the President's Cup again. The New York Knicks are the two seed in the Eastern Conference. And I am lucky to have a Bleav podcast family member, but also a rising star at WFAN, none other than Mr. Rami Lavi. What's up, Rami? How are you doing? Thanks for coming on.
I'm doing all right. Appreciate you having me on, and thank you for the kind words. Still trying to get there, but yeah.
So how fun is this? All right. I mean, we're going to talk a little bit of Rangers in a little bit, but the New York Knicks, all right? There was a lot of talk about what they should do going into the last game of the season. They obviously, as we know the result, they went for it. They won the game in overtime against the Chicago Bulls, but for a brief moment in time, and I think the NBA did a great job of this on that Sunday, where it was hard for teams to kind of pick their matchups in a sense where it's like they wanted to give a game away. But there was a brief moment in time when the game went into overtime, when the Knicks knew the outcome of what happened in the Cavs game. Basically, if they would have lost the game, they could have dropped down to three to play the Pacers, but they ended up winning the game to clinch the two seed. They get home court for the first two rounds, but they have a chance of playing most probably the Philadelphia 76ers with Joel Embiid or the Miami Heat with Jimmy Butler and Eric Spoelstra and playoff Miami Heat. Where did you stand on the debate of, should the Knicks have tried to move down to three, or should they have said, screw it, we don't care, win the game, get 50 wins, get the two seed?
The Knicks are trying to prove a point. That's the biggest thing. This, with everything that happened this season, starting from a 500 mediocre start to the trade. I remember the day of the trade. I was at WFAN. I was freaking out that day. And they have no one starting for them in Indiana. They get blown out. They give up 140 points to Indiana. They lose. And then OG Anunoby comes. It shifts the whole thing. The incredible January that they had. And then OG gets hurt. Randall gets hurt. Mitchell Robinson gets hurt. It feels like the sky is falling. OG gets re-injured after coming back for three games. And then Randall, we find out, is out for the season. With everything that happened, for them to still get the two seed, for them to still win 50 games, and it was an important statement for the team. You don't want to be going into the playoffs the way the Cavs did, where they, in a close game, pulled their starters in the second half, and they're getting booed at home. Their home fans, knowing what was on the line, knowing that this just meant they were going to play Orlando automatically in the 4-5 matchup, you don't want to do that. And by the way, the Bucks didn't give away the two seed. The Bucks would have gotten the two seed had Giannis been healthy. They just are not good without him. So them having to play Indiana in the first round, I wouldn't be shocked if Indiana beats Milwaukee without Giannis, or if he's not 100%. And as far as the Knicks statement is, we can beat anyone. This is who we are. Tom Thibodeau said it after the game. What do you mean? Our goal is to win every game in front of us. For a team like the Cavs that got embarrassed last year in the first round of the playoffs, they just want to win a series, maybe. So they'll win one series and then go face Boston and get their shit kicked in if they get that far.
I was going to say, that's a very big if with the way Cleveland's playing. I think they're like 11-17 in their last 28. Like, they've been brutal.
Exactly. So the Knicks stay hot, go on a run, go into the playoffs with another 40 piece from Jalen Brunson, another 8 rebounds and 7 assists, another great game all around. Go in knowing that it doesn't matter who's in front of us, we can beat them. Whether it was the statement win on Thursday night, obviously up in Boston, which was a statement win. You went up against all their starters. They were blitzing Jalen Brunson. They were trying to stop him. They couldn't. Finally, they gave up after 3 quarters, which, by the way, so did the Knicks. The Knicks didn't play any starters in the fourth. And or the statement win on Sunday. To me, the win on Sunday is just as much of a statement. It was coming out. And even the game Friday night against Brooklyn, it was a game that the Knicks could have just easily rolled over and said, we're good. We have a top 4 seed. Or on Sunday, we have a top 3 seed. We're good. No, we fight in every game. That's the identity of this team. That's been the identity since Tom Thibodeau showed up. It's been even more the identity since Brunson came and he brought his friends with Josh Hart and Dante DiVincenzo. And obviously, giving Deuce McBride more playing time, trading for OG Anunoby. Those are guys who fit the culture, who fit the brand, and something that's been building from day one. So the goal is, we're not scared of anyone. We could beat anyone. So is it a tough matchup? Miami? Sure. Is it a tough matchup? Philadelphia with Joel Embiid? Sure. But the Knicks are better. The Knicks are a 50-win 2 seed. They've earned it in every single way. And so now they have to go out in the playoffs at home. They have one of the best home court advantages in the league, which, by the way, a lot of places don't. Home court still means something to teams like the Knicks, teams like the Celtics, teams like the Heat. Take advantage of that. Go out there and prove why you were one of the best teams in the NBA this year.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing better than playoff basketball in Madison Square Garden. And as we know, you know, I was lucky enough to be in a playoff game in 2021. As we know, that crowd and that building means something. So for them to get home court advantage for at least the first 2 rounds is really nothing to scoff at. And I'll admit, I wanted them to get to stay at 3. I'll admit it. Because I looked at the numbers with Embiid and Maxey. When those two guys were in the lineup, they had the best win percentage in basketball, even ahead of the Celtics. I am deathly scared of Miami. We'll get to them in a second. But as I was watching the game unfold Sunday, I was just like, you know what? Screw it. I don't care. Just win the game and just, you know, be ultra competitive. And I give Tom Thibodeau a lot of credit. And I'm on record saying I think that he's limited as a coach. I think he's got a high floor, low ceiling. But my goodness, man, that team just plays hard all the time. And you know what? Screw it. They are professional athletes. They're ultra competitive. They don't give a shit about the matchups. They think they can beat every team in front of them. And I'm all for it. I am all for it. And just a quick note, since the trade of OG Anunoby, they're 20-3 with him in the lineup. And he has a positive plus minus in every single game he's played. So I don't care. Win the game. 50 wins. That's a major accomplishment given everything that the Knicks went through this year. And it's just awesome. The headliner is Jalen Brunson. All right. I am on record of saying that I didn't love the signing. I didn't think it was going to be this, not even in my wildest dreams. I said to give that percentage of the salary cap to somebody who I didn't think was going to make all NBA ever in his career is a mistake. Well, he's going to make first or second team all NBA. Fourth in the league in scoring. He's actually been a better ball mover and distributor down the stretch of the season. So that's my little spiel. Gush glowingly about Jalen Brunson because you're on record of saying that he's the best Nick of your lifetime.
He really is the best Nick of my lifetime. And I'm not old enough to have watched Ewing. And so I don't remember 94 or the late 90s. I don't remember any of his career. But, you know, when you think about guys like Carmelo Anthony is really the only other one you can compare it to. But the difference is Jalen Brunson didn't show up here as a superstar. He showed up here as a guy who I thought was going to be a really solid role player. I watch a lot of the NBA. I have league pass. I watch games every single night. So I love Jalen Brunson. I love the signing at the time. I thought he was a perfect guy who fit the culture. I thought it showed that they have a vision with Tom Thibodeau, which, by the way, I've thought that Tom Thibodeau has his limitations at time too, but at the same time, everything I've seen from him, I see him evolving over the last 4 years more than I've ever seen at any previous time in his career. I see him evolving in the way that he's willing to use, go with the hot hand a little bit more, stuff that he hasn't been willing to do in the past. His out of timeout plays that he calls are incredible, which is crazy. He's not known for his offensive minded coach, but it's almost like they get an easy bucket every time out of a timeout.
Yeah.
And then of course you talk about the culture and the way they play and how hard every single guy plays. They built a culture and they made Jalen Brunson the face of it. And then he brought his players here. So I knew Jalen Brunson was going to be a culture setter and a guy who could be a really solid point guard for this team. Yes, I thought he was probably more the 18 points, maybe five, six assists per game facilitator type point guard, and ultimately build a bunch of role players and get another superstar next to him. I never thought he was going to be this. And what this is right now is, like I said, like you said, the greatest Knick of my lifetime, because with Carmelo, who was the superstar when he got here, Brunson developed into a superstar. Where so many players come to New York and all of a sudden you see them shy away from being a superstar. All of a sudden you see them shrink on the biggest stage. Jalen Brunson blossomed and turned into the best version of himself. And you talked about later in the season becoming more of a distributor. He's evolved so much as the season has gone on. He continues his game not only from last year to this year, but as the season goes on, his game continues to evolve and get better and better. He finds things that work. As they're blitzing him, when there's no OG, no Randall, on a nightly basis, he's getting double and triple teamed, picked up 90 feet, and they're blitzing him on defense every time. He's getting rid of the ball, running around almost Steph Curry-like, relocating, getting it again, passing it again, relocating again. It opens everything up for everyone else. It's why he's been such a good distributor, because everyone else is getting open shots because of what he's doing off the ball. So it's not just the scoring, it's not just the leadership, it's not just the culture, it's everything he does on the court that's not scoring that makes everyone around him better, that makes him the best Knick of my lifetime. Carmelo Anthony, the one knock on him, he was the greatest scorer I've ever seen, still the greatest scorer I've ever seen. And it's kind of funny because if you think who would be the perfect fit on this team, a guy who doesn't need the ball in his hands but can create his own shot when he needs it, Carmelo Anthony, a stretch four who can get his own shot anytime, any place, that would be the ideal superstar next to Jalen Brunson. But he never made his teammates better. He wasn't the defender, or at least gives the effort. Jalen Brunson has never asked to defend the number one star player on the other team. Either Deuce McBride or OG Anunoby will defend the top wing player on the other team, right? So, you know, Brunson's never asked to do that. But still, what he does on defense, rotating to get all the, he leads the league in charges drawn, right?
By the way, hold on 1 second. During the regular season, Jalen, you can relax on the charges, all right? I love it that you take so many of them, but sometimes you can lose a battle to win the war.
Yeah.
Relax on the charges, because
Tom Thibodeau
plays you so many minutes. Just relax on the charges.
But that's the Knicks thing. Right. It's like there's one gear, there isn't another gear. And that's my biggest concern with the Knicks in the playoffs, also, if you want to go there for a second, is that maybe there isn't another gear for them to go to. Whereas all these other teams, you know, Milwaukee, Boston, Indiana, the 76ers, Miami, they haven't played defense for the last 6 months. Now, to tell them to just turn it on and there's a switch that they can flip and all of a sudden they're going to play defense, that's difficult too. Whereas the Knicks have been playing this way all year. So, you know, they have a leg up. But what happens if the Knicks' whole advantage, and this was really the case in the 2021 season, like you talked about, that you went to a playoff game that year, there was no second switch. Last year, that when they turned the switch on, was Jalen Brunson going from star to superstar in the playoffs last year.
Right.
I believe what we saw down the stretch of this season, the last 10 games, Jalen Brunson has taken it to a next level. And you talk about the Garden. I was there game five last year against Miami, the game they won. The place was electric. They were down 3-1 in the series. It didn't matter. The place was on fire. The Quentin Grimes possession, if you remember, when he gets the hard screen by Bam.
After he hurt his leg, which is so curious back up. Why Grimes is... his tenure ended the way it did here, but whatever, that's a different story.
Because he didn't take that next step to being that guy. It's unfortunate. He could have been that guy, but Deuce McBride stepped up and he didn't. And sometimes in a limited role, it's so hard. And you talk about it with Bojan Bogdanovic. He got so much hate when he first took the trade. Even look at a guy like Isaiah Hartenstein, who in a limited role at the beginning of last year struggled. You have to learn how to be great in a limited role. And you see it happening slowly with Bojan because he's a consummate professional. So when as the league, you know, as he's adjusting to sitting out as opposed to playing 38 minutes a night, he's adjusting now to playing 15, 16, maybe 20 minutes a night. He's gotten so much better. Deuce McBride, what's amazing about him? If he plays,
I was always a fan.
And that's such a hard thing to do, to play 48 minutes a game one night, to play 2 minutes a game the next night, and still bring the same energy level, the same consistency to both games. That's hard to do. Quentin Grimes couldn't hack it. Deuce McBride did. So what this team and what this front office has shown, if you can't do it, we'll ship you on out. We'll bring the new guy in. We're not afraid to take an L on a draft pick in Obi Toppin. We're not afraid to take an L, quote unquote, on a draft pick in either Emmanuel Quickley, who I think is still great, but they had to put him in that trade. Obviously, you have to give to get, or RJ Barrett. They're saying whatever is the best for the team. We're not thinking about this emotionally. We're thinking about this in a rational, pragmatic way. We're not trying to, you know, win the trade on social media. We're trying to win games on the court. And that's what's been so special from the top down, from Leon Rose all the way down to the players on the court. It's all about winning. It's all about the same goal.
We'll get to the limitations or our fears about the Knicks going forward. But the best thing, and you talked about like the front office and making moves and who's going to, you know, we're constantly looking for the next move. Quite honestly, the best thing and the most impressive thing that Jalen Brunson has done has tabled all the offseason talk that we're putting it in the back pocket. Knicks fans, we never, ever did that, right? We didn't do that. Last year in the playoffs, we're constantly thinking about, like, if Joel Embiid flames out in the playoffs, is he the next guy? People were talking about the Lakers, Anthony Davis. Are they actually going to trade him? Like, there was some smoke about that. The best thing that Jalen Brunson has done this year is we don't give a crap about the offseason right now. Like, we don't care. And you see less of it on Twitter. You hear less of it in the scuttlebutt. We're focused on this season and this postseason only. And for Knicks fans who are yearning for something, that is no small feat.
Yeah, and that's huge because I said this a couple weeks ago. I saw people, because Paul George is going to be a free agent this offseason, and he's so past his prime. I don't know. Anyone who's going to give massive superstar money to Paul George is ridiculous. But I see Knicks fans on Twitter making jersey swaps of Paul George. I'm like, are you not enjoying what's in front of you right now? We could have a run that we haven't seen. And it's funny because in January, when the Knicks had that special month, I said to my father, I said, hey, there's a good chance I'm going to be hosting on WFAN soon. I had not hosted a show yet. I'd been, you know, producing and on a bunch of shows, but I hadn't hosted my own show yet. So there's a chance I'm going to be hosting shows in New York City on WFAN as the Knicks are going on a magical run this summer. And, you know, obviously over the next month or so, I ended up getting my first couple of shows, but it felt magical in that time. So yeah, I said to everyone who is, if you're posting a jersey swap for, I don't give a shit who it is, if it's Paul George, who is a terrible idea, but anyone else, I'm blocking you. Stop it. That's not what this is about right now. You know why? Because Jalen Brunson has proven that he could be the number one guy on a championship caliber team. And I didn't know that he could do that previously. But over the last 10 games, it feels like Jalen Brunson took that next step. Since they announced that Julius Randle's not coming back, he took this step from, this guy's a superstar, but maybe probably needs a running mate with him too. He's a superstar who can be the number one guy on a championship team. And so you can table all those discussions. You can stop everything and just look at what you have right now and enjoy it. Appreciate the moment, because my lifetime as a Knicks fan, 20 years, we haven't had seasons like this. One, two seasons like this. Even last year, which was a fun season. And then I think the playoff run,
it was more of a novelty last year.
Yeah, they exceeded expectations. This year, it's a fun team, and there's an expectation that this team's going to go far. We haven't had that maybe since the 2013 New York Knicks, I think. And that's incredible. Appreciate that, because that's the second time in my lifetime that we've had that.
By the way, ESPN on Sunday's telecast made it seem like the Knicks had not won 20 games in over 50 games in almost 20 years. It's like they forgot that the 2013 season happened, which was one of the most fun teams of my lifetime. You know, the year Carmelo Anthony was top three
Smith
voting. It was just like, yeah, that happened before. It hasn't been as bad as you make it all the time. But, you know, Knicks for clicks, that's what ESPN does. But yeah, no, it's time to embrace it. I actually kind of like the Paul George fit as a basketball fit, but again,
but we'll not right now.
Yeah. We'll table that in the off season. Right now we're trying to win a title. You talked about how fun this team is and the dynamic with the, you know, the Villanova boys. Brunson, DiVincenzo, Josh Hart, our guys, Isaiah Hartenstein. He's not a Villanova guy, but he's a born-again Villanova guy. Like, this team is just so incredibly, incredibly likable. And they play with a joy and a synergy. And Brunson takes a lot of shots. He does. But it just seems like it's almost hard to describe because there's no animosity among anybody in terms of their roles. Like, I know OG Anunoby wanted out of Toronto because he wanted a bigger role on offense to be able to create. And he's not necessarily getting that here, but for some reason here, it doesn't matter. Like, Randall, and we'll expound on Randall in a little bit, but like, even he, as Black Polish as he can be, and it was always my biggest issue with him, even he seemed to be getting it a little more, right? Like, I just, you know, what do you see with the chemistry here? And did you think the Villanova trio was going to be as good together as they've been? Because I didn't see this.
I don't think anyone saw it. Think about the DiVincenzo contract, which is 4 years, $50 million. I forget who just got paid 4 years, $70 million. Somebody in
Grayson
the league.
Grayson Allen by the Phoenix Suns.
My God. I mean, Grayson Allen isn't half the player that Dante DiVincenzo is. He's just
short. Like, shot 45% from three. I kind of like
he shoots
Grayson
threes
Allen,
and yeah. He runs around and he hurts people, right? That's literally what Grayson Allen does. He's a college player. He's, you know, and that's what people thought this Brunson or this Villanova group was, a group of guys who work well in college but doesn't translate to the NBA. But who would have thought, right? You put a bunch of guys who really like each other and played well in college together, and you bring them together in the NBA, and all of a sudden it's great. Of course there's chemistry there. They grew up together. They played multiple years at Villanova together. They weren't one and done guys. They were guys who won championships together. They're really good friends. You see it whenever there's content. I don't know if you watch the Slam Magazine interview with them or if you watch, obviously, the podcast that they do. They're really close. They're really good friends. You talked about OG coming in here and fitting in seamlessly. We'll get to Julius in a little bit if you want to. But everyone on this team has bought in, and that's the culture that, again, back to Tom Thibodeau, that Tom Thibodeau has built. It's the culture that Jalen Brunson has built, and they kind of make fun of him, how he always says, coach is right, you know, coach says this, coach is right. And the other Villanova guys kind of make fun of Brunson for doing that. But he obviously is like the right-hand man for Tom Thibodeau. He is the coach on the floor for Tom Thibodeau. And we talked about it with Deuce McBride. We talked about it with Bojan Bogdanovic. They don't care about their roles. It's not about them individually. And there's such a vibe around this team of a team energy that it's the team first and only about the team. It feels like everyone is so proud to be a part of this Knicks team. And that's part of it, that they just are happy with the role they have. They're proud of the role they have. And there's nothing that they can do that's not about me individually. It's just about the team. We want to be part of something special. And I think they all appreciate that something special is going on here. And you want to know who the piece is that they should move and get this offseason? It's Mikal Bridges. They should go get the fourth Villanova guy and complete the squad. That's who they should go get. But, you know, that this
I'm
team,
not sure how realistic that is with the Nets, asking price and the Nets, you know, being little brother and trading with us. And
here's the thing,
frankly,
though,
as much as I would love it, I think he's a little superfluous to OG Anunoby because they play basically the same spot.
Yes and no. And again, I don't I'm breaking my own rule here. I don't want to talk about right. This. I'm enjoying the season now, but you know, we'll talk about this in the offseason. I think it would be a good fit. And also, the Nets are terrible, and they don't have a first-round pick. They need picks. So there are reasons for them. And I worked on the Nets broadcast this year, so I got that team is awful. And Mikal Bridges, it felt like, seemed and felt so out of place. He didn't take the next step this year. So there's some weirdness going on there. And so maybe they could get him on the cheap. You know what I mean? There's certain things that could happen with that. But forget about that. The team that they have right now, everyone's bought in. And you wonder if more teams are going to start trying to do this, put college teammates together, because it seems to work. And what's funny is most college teams don't translate to the NBA. Guys like Drew Timmy, who have these incredible runs in college basketball, don't then become NBA stars, right? It's such a different game in college versus the NBA. But they found a group of guys who when they first came into the league, weren't superstars, weren't guys who you thought would be great. I mean, DiVincenzo was probably thought to be the best guy from that draft class.
The 10th pick.
Right.
Of those was the three second guys. Rounder. Josh Hart was the 30th pick.
Exactly. So DiVincenzo is probably thought to be the top of that group, what Jalen Brunson developed into. And I think, you know, the Knicks really saw it when they brought Rick Brunson over. They had a plan. They had a goal. And this was all part of the plan all along. It was one clear goal, one clear plan. And, you know, people thought last year, oh, you're losing Obi Toppin length for another wing in Dante DiVincenzo. How are you going to make it work with all these wing players? No, it's a culture setter. It doesn't matter. It wasn't about the player. And DiVincenzo has turned out to be an incredible fit. And it just shows you that you can actually trust this front office to do things, which is also, as a Knicks fan, mind-boggling. That how much trust do you have in this front office?
And I've had my issues with the front office. I call them the CAA mafia, you know, in terms of maximizing assets. I've had my issues. I've had my nitpicks. But right now, like, I'm not sure I can say anything. I'm, like, practically speechless, which is going to be interesting when, you know, OG Anunoby's contract talks come up this summer. Again, not to really focus on the summer, but as great of a fit as he's been, you know, the availability is an issue. So I'm curious to see how that's going to go. But you talked about, you know, getting the Avengers stones, putting together the Thanos thing and getting Mikal Bridges, which kind of is a transition into Julius and where Julius, you know, fits here. I have my issues with Randall. I am on record of saying I have my issues with Randall. I knew that when he got hurt, that the Knicks weren't, you know, that OG was the way more indispensable Knick than Randall. I do feel bad for Randall in a sense that he tried his hardest to get back and really be a part of this. And as much as I think that Randall's future with the team is in flux, and I think he's a very good regular season player and not a good postseason player, I do kind of feel bad for how this season ended, because they did have that three-game stretch where they were all together where they looked awesome. Where are you at with Randall right now?
It's tough. I agree with you. It's both ways. There's two sides to this, obviously. There's, on one hand, Julius changed himself and has looked as good as he looked. He understood. It felt like almost when they made the trade, Julius understood that, all right, this is a shift in mentality, that there's an entire culture shift going on here. We're going for guys who are hard-nosed, going to give effort, not guys who are going to hold the ball and turn the ball over the way he does. You know, when he's just the black hole, like you mentioned earlier on the court, it almost felt like he was starting to buy in even more, which give Julius Randle a ton of credit, because when Tom Thibodeau came over, he was the culture setter with Tom Thibodeau. They did it together. It was the two of them
together. Right, and the problem was with Julius is that Tibbs enabled him to play like LeBron James. And let's face it, he's not LeBron James.
And he never's going to be. He's never going to be what, you know, Knick fans want him to be, what he was in that 2021 season. He'll never be that. It's just not who he is. He could be a really good role player on this team. I still believe that. The question is, does Julius know that he is more of a role player? And that's the other side of it. I don't think he ever will be. And I think it was almost a blessing in disguise that, you know, that he got hurt, because my father texted me. He's like, he's out for the season. Like when they announced that he's getting the surgery, he's like, my father said two things. The first thing he said to me was, well, I'm glad he took his time making that decision on surgery, as a joke, you know, right. Because it is funny how it took like 3 months, but he was trying to come back. He was putting the team first. But ultimately, I said this when he got hurt, if he was going to come back and be a black hole and be the guy, think, oh, it's Julius time, which sometimes that happens with him. It's like, oh, let's go. This is Jew time right now. I'm going to go out there and prove a point and be the superstar, especially if he's not fully healthy. We saw how that works in the playoffs last year. It doesn't. It sucks. It was awful watching him, you know, get over aggressive on offense and then on defense, just drag his feet, not go for rebounds, not box out. I was yelling during game 6 last year. It felt like if Julius Randle gave them anything in game 6 last year, they come home for game seven at Madison Square Garden. I'm watching it, pulling my hair out, like, just box out on one freaking rebound and we could go to game seven.
That was the game where it was like, and again, I feel bad for the guy right now because he seems to be a great guy. He seems like his teammates love him. But it was at that moment where you just said, where I was just like, if they ever want to really win, the bromance between him and Tibbs is going to have to be cut. And he's the guy who's going to need to be moved.
It did, though. He sat him, actually, in game five that I was at. Tibbs sat him for an 11-minute stretch, bridging the first and second quarters last year in game five. Because they, if you remember, they went down early in game five, and Tibbs brought in Obi Toppin to beat the energy off the bench. He had a couple alley-oops. All of a sudden, he's running around the floor, and there was this revived energy in the building, and the Knicks came back, and then he ultimately doesn't bring Julius back to like 3 minutes to go in the first half. So we saw that Tibbs started, hey, I'm not going to play you if you're not going to give it. Even a couple of times this year in fourth quarters when the team was rolling without him, he left him on the bench for longer than he would have in the past. So I do think it was shifting, but ultimately I didn't want to see, because of how good it was with Julius and how much it felt like he's buying in and how much it felt this year that it did shift. And I don't know if you saw the video last night. He was walking in Central Park and fans were like, hey, Julius, let's go. And he's waving and he seems like he's happy to be there. He's happy to be a Knick. He's proud to represent the Knicks. I didn't want to see it go south again in the playoffs because this is a guy with the thumbs down season. How the fan
2022
base
was a major stain.
And then they come, but he comes back from it. Last year, he came back from it. And then again, at the end of last year, how the playoffs ended, everyone, Julius, got to get rid of him. And then he comes back again. And this year, it felt like he won the fan base over again with a few more plays. So the up and down roller coaster that he's had with the fan base, I couldn't have another playoffs where he's terrible. So it's going to be a decision in the offseason what they decide to do with him, because I do think he looked as good as he looked. So do you decide to move off of him in this offseason? Maybe
it's going to be hard just given the fact that he's having his shoulder, you know, redone.
But it's not as hard as it would be if he was there and had another terrible postseason. That would be even harder to move it. So if you're going to move him, maybe now is the best time to move him. My father, what he texted me was, quick, we got to win a championship before Julius comes back and ruins it. You know, it's a joke.
I get it. Yeah, sure. Listen, I get it. I'm part of that hive per se.
Yeah, and my father's saying it half kidding, but yeah, it feels like he's a disruptor to everything they're trying to do, which is crazy because he's also the guy who was the face of it for so long. And so it's tough. I love Julius Randle. I really do. I have a Julius Randle jersey. I think what he's done for this franchise, you have to appreciate what he's done for this franchise. He was the first one to show up and change the culture. It really is true. But ultimately, sometimes you need those guys who get you to a certain point. There's only so far they can get you. And now you move on to the next part. And the next phase probably is without Julius Randle.
Yeah. The Julius thing is really interesting. It's going to play itself out in some way. It'll be interesting to see. But it's time to focus on the games at hand. The 7-8 game in the Eastern Conference Wednesday night, Philadelphia against Miami. The 9-10 is the Bulls against the Hawks. It's most likely going to be Philadelphia and Miami 7-8 in some order, even though I do think the Bulls are a little interesting. As we saw Sunday, the Hawks, I have no respect for. They gave up 150 points on the last game of the season. They can kick rocks. If you had your choice between Philly and Miami, who do you want to see in the first round and why?
So the logical answer is Miami. The pragmatic answer is Miami. They haven't been close to as good this year. They don't have some of the guys who were hitting huge shots for them last year. They really don't. And it's just tough to imagine. I know we do this every year, but it's tough to imagine them just turning it on in the playoffs again. It's so hard to do, but
and yet
they do it every time.
And yet.
Exactly. And the difference is, we haven't seen them play against the Knicks with a fully healthy OG Anunoby in the lineup. OG knows against Jimmy Butler, stay down, stay down, stay down, stay down, and stay down again, because Jimmy's just going to use that pump fake 36 times in a row if he has to. until he gets you in the air, and then he'll draw the foul. That's all he does. Like, Jimmy Butler, the playoff Jimmy thing is just that he gets to the line more than any other player in the postseason. When fouls get limited, Butler gets to the line more than anyone. So the combination of Jimmy Butler and some of these referees, that I'm scared of. If Scott Foster's doing the games, then I'll be terrified of the Heat. But as long as it's not Scott Foster, give me anyone else, right? And all of a sudden, I'm not as scared of the Heat. Like, I respect what Spoelstra does. I respect him. At some point, the talent on that team, they're not as talented as the Knicks. They're really not. And I know last year they weren't, but think about how many guys didn't show up in that series. Barrett was a no-show. Quickly was a no-show. I think Grimes was hurt. Julius was a no-show. I trust that guys like, I think Bogdanovich is going to show up in a playoff series and give you 15 to 20 points off the bench. I think Deuce McBride is going to come in and give you energy off the bench. DiVincenzo, Hart, OG Anunoby, even Hartenstein and Mitchell Robinson, these guys are all going to be great in a postseason. So I think top to bottom, the Knicks lineup is far better. I'm scared of a guy like Terry Rozier. Would be typical for him to go off for 50 points in a game three, and all of a sudden you're looking at being down 2-1 on the road in Miami. Yeah, I could see that happening. Of course I could see that happening. It's freaking Heat culture and everything that comes along with it. So that's the emotional side of it, though. The emotional side is I don't want any part of the Heat. I'd rather see the Sixers. The Sixers, the Knicks crushed them. Remember, Embiid was healthy-ish last time.
It was a Friday night game. They walloped them in Philadelphia.
Exactly. And Embiid was kind of healthy, but that's what he is now. And I know they've won 8 in a row to close out the season, which is a nice run for the Sixers. It's looked good.
By the way, how crazy is it that they couldn't get out of the play-in game race, that they couldn't get up to 6 after winning 8 straight games, considering how condensed the East was? Like, that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, you can't. It tells you that the regular season matters. You can't dig yourself a hole like that. I'm sorry. And they knew it. That's why they rushed Embiid back.
Because Embiid was hurt, right? Like, it was only because he got hurt that they dug themselves a hole.
Yes, I get it. But I think, you know, if you're thinking about it logically, I'm more afraid of a healthy Embiid. He's better than anyone on the Heat by far. A healthy Embiid, a healthy Maxi. And Nick Nurse is as good a coach as Tom Thibodeau, as good a coach as Eric Spoelstra. Those are some of the top coaches in the league when you talk about those three guys. I'd be scared of a guy like Nick Nurse. I'd be scared of a guy like Joel Embiid if he's fully healthy. So, again, the logical, pragmatic answer is I want the Heat. But the emotional answer, give me the Sixers. I'll take my chance with them. Plus, my old boss, I guess, now just went to Philadelphia, Spike Eskin, to host his radio show in the afternoon in Philly. That would be a fun transition for them to be going at each other. That would be really fun. So, and by the way, you mentioned the Bulls. The Bulls are like the best bad team in the league. Like, they're not that good. They're under 500. And yet it feels like they've been in every single game this year.
They've been a little bit above 500 for the better part of half the season.
Like, yeah, if I'm the Heat or the Sixers, I don't want to lose the play-in game because I don't want to have to face the Bulls in that second play-in game with a chance to go home. I really don't. Like, I could see a scenario, I'm not even kidding, where the Sixers or the Heat end up losing to the Bulls in game two of the play-in, or caught in a really tight game in game two of the play-in against the Bulls. I don't want to be in that spot, especially with Boston looming. I want to get it done quickly and play the Knicks in the first round. And it seems like the Sixers would be favored in a series against the Knicks. Bring it on. This is what I'm saying. I don't care who it is. Bring it on. We are the team that we got here for a reason. This Knicks team can beat anyone. I truly believe that.
I'm with you. I'd rather see the Sixers. I know what the numbers with Embiid and Maxi on the court. I mean, I said it earlier. They had the best win percentage in the league. I don't want any part of this Miami Heat team. I just don't. The team's been to the Eastern Conference Finals 3 of the last 4 years. All right. I know it doesn't make any sense. I know what the numbers say. I know the history of my childhood in the late 90s, 2000s. Just everything. I don't want it. I don't want any part of it. And nothing would make me happier than for the Boston Celtics, who have had this quote unquote unbelievable season, according to all the metrics love Boston, for the Miami Heat to end up the 8th seed and for them to beat them in the first round, because I honestly think it could happen.
Oh, 100%. I hate that matchup for Boston. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the Knicks, the Heat, I should say, are the anti Adam Silver, because every year they're mediocre in the regular season. They're like, sure, add a play-in round. We don't care. Once we get to the playoffs, we'll turn it on. We don't care. It's like everything the league has tried to do to add value to the regular season, the Heat are like, whatever. We don't care. We still don't value it. And maybe that's the best way to do it. Eric Spoelstra is the best coach in the league right now, in my opinion. And sure, he's going to just value what he wants to value. And it's not the regular season, I'll tell you that much. He's proven that time and time again that it really doesn't matter, because when you get to the playoffs, he can turn it on.
But I do think they're unique in that sense, right?
Oh, 100%. There's no other team that can do it.
The only team in the league that really thinks like that. I mean, you could make a case about the Lakers, but I just don't think the Lakers are as good.
No.
But they're the only team in the league that thinks like that. So I guess this is a good question for you. You know, good segue is, the league has been talking about top seeds being able to pick their opponent. What do you think of that idea?
It's fun. It would add some bulletin board material. Like, if you're the Knicks, it's like, we want you, Orlando. And all of a sudden, or I would take Cleveland, right? If you look at the board this year, it's like, oh, give me Cleveland. We crushed you last year.
Technically, Cleveland's a top four seed, so they wouldn't
you're right.
Be in the mix.
Right. So I'd have to pick Orlando or Indianapolis. But that's the point. You pick one of Indiana or Orlando and you're like, hey, we want you guys, because the Knicks struggled with both of those teams this year. It's fun. It makes for a very fun series. Like, if Boston's going out there and says, hey, you know what? We're going to face our demons in the first round. We want you, the Heat. You know what I mean? Like, that would be, it would make for fun bulletin board material. No one would pick the Heat. The Heat would probably end up as the 5 seed if you got to pick. You know what I mean? The last team that gets to pick would end up with the Heat. That's probably how it would work. Doesn't work scheduling wise, but I could see if any league's going to do it, it would be the NBA. The NBA loves the gossip, loves the social media of it. So I think the NBA of all leagues would probably go for something like that. And I think it would be fun. I think it would be fun to watch.
I think we both believe that the Knicks can win their first round series. And depending on how the East shakes out, a lot of that's going to have to do with Giannis's health status and how he's going to come back and when he's going to come back, because, you know, a lot of things have to break right. But if it's the Knicks and the Celtics at the end of this, and again, we are foreshadowing, we are putting all the positive vibes out there. We don't even know who they're playing in the first round yet. But does a part of you think that the Knicks could beat the Celtics in a playoff series? Because I truly believe that if the Knicks get past their first round series, that they could beat the Celtics and make the finals.
Yeah, they can. For sure they can. It's not that, you know, I don't think they'd be favored in a series. I think it would be a tough, grueling 7-game series. And they'd have to go win a game 7 in Boston, for sure. But that said, of course this Knicks team can do it. That's my point. This Knicks team could beat anyone. Even Denver in a finals, which I think is a tougher matchup than Boston. And you mentioned the metrics earlier. Every team with the metrics that Boston has this year has won the finals. Like, in history of the NBA, every single team that has had this successful a regular season has won the NBA finals. But yet, when you get late in games, you look at Boston and they start to get stagnant and their half-court offense feels like dribble, 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 isolation, whoever has the ball, shoot. Like, they have so many guys who can do that. So, you know, give them some credit for that. Obviously, with the two Jays and Drew Holiday also, and Porzingis. And of course, you could see Porzingis going off for 40 points at Madison Square Garden in a crucial game 6. Of course, you could see that. But I don't count the Knicks out. It, you know, what is it, like maybe 65-35 that I'd favor the Celtics? That's still a good chance that the Knicks win that series, you know? So I'm not ruling anything out. Again, let's worry about the first round. I think the toughest matchups are, if you had to seed it, the toughest matchups are Boston, and then Miami and Philly are right there for the Knicks. And then a little bit of space before Milwaukee, even, because I think Milwaukee, I can't see them just, they don't have another gear to go to. They've tried the last few weeks to go to that other gear defensively. It hasn't worked. And if Giannis isn't 100%, I don't trust Milwaukee at all. So it's funny. We're going to get, it feels like probably the toughest matchup we're going to see before Boston is going to come in that first round. Maybe that's the way it should be. Like, get in playoff mode right away, get there and turn it on right away.
Iron sharpens iron. You could really make a case that for the playoffs, that the four best teams in the East are likely going to be playing each other in some combination in the first round, which is, you don't see that very often.
And that's why the league wants to go to that choosing your own team thing, because it's going to suck if the second round all of a sudden is Boston against Orlando and it's Philly against Indiana, or the Knicks against Indiana, or the Knicks against an injured Milwaukee. And all of a sudden it's like, okay, the second round might end on both sides in five games. You know what I mean? So that's where it kind of creates a better playoff, I guess, picture if truly the best teams play. And the only way the league can do it is by having the top teams choose the bottom teams, because there's no other way to do it. Because think about it. You can't say, oh, well, we really know, wink, wink, the Heat are better. They should have really been a four seed. They just weren't trying. Like, you can't say that, you know? So the only way to have the best teams play each other, the best teams play the worst teams in the first round, and then have the next best teams make it to the second round is by having a choose your opponent system. So it's interesting, but yeah, we could get to a point, we've seen this before in the NBA, where because of how seeding works, the second round is kind of a dud compared to the first round. But we'll see. Like I said, I think it's going to be a tough matchup for the Knicks. I hope they can get through to the second round. I believe they can. And then almost it feels like, okay, in the second round, maybe you'll have an easier matchup and you can kind of fine tune everything and get ready for Boston.
It's hard to really give a good preview because we don't know who they're playing, but the fact that we think that the Knicks could make the conference finals or even the finals is just, given where we've been as a fan base, is just absolutely wild. I want to transition to the Rangers for a second because their regular season just closed out. They won the President's Cup. There's been a little bit of a drought for President's Cup winners. Hopefully that they can, break that. Huge win last night against Ottawa, because we don't have to see the Islanders. We don't have to see the Lightning. We don't have to see, a bunch of these teams. Like, I think there was a chance that they could play Carolina in the first round, I thought, but we don't want that. Where are you at with the Rangers right now going into the playoffs? It's been an unbelievable year. The kind of turn in the punch bowl has been their ability to score 5-on-5. And we see in the playoffs that that's a bit of a problem. Again, it's hard to really do a preview with the Rangers right now because we don't know who they're playing, but how confident are you in this Rangers team and us seeing a 1994 scenario all over again?
I'll tell you this. I'm more confident in the Rangers than I am in the Knicks. Like, I love this Knicks team.
Me too, by the way. Me too.
The Rangers are the better team of the two teams. The Rangers are the President's Trophy winner. They are the best team in hockey. I think similar to the Knicks winning that 50th game at the end of the season, it's so funny because there are a couple of parallels here that I really love. But similar to the Knicks and that statement win, the Rangers came out and had a statement win last night against Ottawa. It was, hey, we're here. You know, people think we faltered at the end of the year. No. Igor had a shutout. They scored a bunch of goals. They dominated from the moment the puck dropped, start to finish. It felt like almost a celebration of the regular season, of everything they accomplished throughout the regular season. It felt like a celebration of that at Madison Square Garden last night. They dominated, and they close out the season as the best team in the NHL. 55 wins, a franchise record for the Rangers. The fourth time they've won the President's Trophy. And by the way, the President's Trophy, the last time, it wasn't that long ago. It was 11 years ago that they won the Stanley Cup with Chicago in 2013. So it's not like it's been a million years since the President's Trophy winner won a Stanley Cup. It's 11 years. It happens.
A mini drought.
Exactly. And every year you can point to something else on why the biggest one, the worst one for sure, was Boston last year. Yes, the greatest regular season team of all time, 120 or 130 points, whatever the ridiculous that they had. And then they lost to a Florida team that, by the way, was better. You talk about seeding, was better. We're seeing it this year because Florida was one of the best teams in the league, right? Was actually better than a lot of people thought. They just didn't have as good of a regular season. So it's just, to look at it and say, oh, it's because they won the President's Trophy. It's not true. The Rangers in 2015, when they won the last time they won the President's Trophy, they didn't go to the Cup. That was the year after they went to the Cup, but they got damn near close. If Matt Zuccarello doesn't get hurt in that series against Tampa, they probably do go to the Cup. They were a really, really good team that year. So it doesn't bother me. To me, it was a statement win. And you talk about that similarity. The other similarity is last year, they're left with this terrible taste in their mouth where it feels like they never recovered from losing to Tampa in 2022. That last year, all of a sudden, there was just this bad taste in their mouth. You go into the playoffs, and the way they faltered against the Devils in the first round was just awful. Just left an awful taste.
After being up 2-0.
Exactly. It was just terrible. The team had no energy. They had no life to them. They needed new life. And Peter Laviolette came in here and breathed new life into this team from day one. We talked about the practices. I have a couple of friends who are on the Rangers beat. And you look at the practices that they had during, you know, during training camp, you see some of the videos from some of the scuffles that they've had during practices, how intense they've been. And then obviously the huddle that they have at every single, at the end of every single skate around, at the end of every single practice. There was a matter of intent from day one with Peter Laviolette. And I thought they were going to burn out. And it looked like maybe they did in January when they had that little lull. And it was more about Igor really struggling during that time. But Jonathan Quick was almost the savior for a little bit of a stretch. And then after the playoff, after the All-Star break, it felt like they kicked it back into gear and they became the best team in the league again. And this is just a mindset thing. Again, similar to Tom Thibodeau and the Knicks, Peter Laviolette, what he's done with this team, starting with Panarin on down, it's been a mindset of we are this tough team. We are a team that has energy, not like last year that was just like a dead team walking. We're more similar to the 22 team, but more talented than that 2022 team. And they're ready for whatever. And their matchup is probably going to, they're probably going to get a really favorable matchup in the first round of the playoffs. And that's good. Get a quick 5-game series in there, get a quick sweep. I hope I'm not jinxing it. I hope they get a quick series in the first round and then get ready to face one of the better teams in the league in the second round. The Stanley Cup playoffs, it's a gruel. It's a grind. That's how it always has been. But I'm excited for it for the New York Rangers.
Shout out to Johnny Lazarus, by the way, who I spoke to in January when the Rangers were having that little bit of a lull, and he basically predicted it to a T. All right. He was like, you know, every year we do this thing with Shesterkin where we get a little nervous and then all of a sudden he kicks it back into gear. Like he called it to a T. He does awesome work with the Rangers and the NHL in general, but like just shout out to him because he absolutely nailed it. You talk about the game last night being a statement. The comeback win against the Islanders, I think, was a major statement, you know, because again, they're having this awesome regular season, right? They're struggling, but yet they still struggle to score 5-on-5. And Panarin gets the goal, a 5-on-5 goal, and they win in overtime against a hated rival, which a team that they could have seen in the playoffs. Like that was a big, big deal. So I love the way that they've closed the season. And again, it's hard to really preview because we don't know who they're going to play, but you got to feel good if you're the Rangers right now, because it seems like they're cresting upwards. And that's always awesome to, regardless of what sport it is, when you're going into the playoffs, you want to be cresting upwards.
Yeah. And you talk about the Celtics earlier, the Celtics, like having just that time where they won the Eastern Conference, right? The best record in the East by 12 games. And it felt like, whatever, we could just chill here, right? Till the season's over. It's fine. Like we're good. You never want to be going into the playoffs not having that full intensity, right? So the Rangers having those last two games where it felt like they had to turn it on for those last two games. You talk about the Islander game, which I thought they outplayed the Islanders that whole game. They just couldn't score. And somebody said something, somebody called into WFAN that night after the game and was like, you know, my problem with the Islanders or with the Rangers is they've won so many games in shootouts and they won so many games in overtime. The overtime and shootout rules change in the NHL in the playoffs. How are they going to be able to score 5-on-5? Yeah, that's been a struggle. But as long as Igor is doing this well, that's the biggest thing. He's hot right now. And we know, we've said this. I mean, it's such a cliche, but when you have a hot goalie in the NHL in the playoffs, you can do anything. It doesn't matter who you are. You can beat anyone if you have a hot goalie. So I do think it's going to be about the stars, and Lafreniere has developed into a star. Obviously, Mika later in the year has turned it on after a slow start. Kreider, we know, is going to show up. I think Trocheck and Panarin on that line with Lafreniere are going to show up also. Panarin's had an MVP-type season for the Rangers. And if you could get anything, something out of the bottom six, whether it's Kaapo Kakko, whether it's energy from Matt Rempe or whoever's on that line, Johnny Brodzinski and Will Cooley have been good and showed flashes at times this year. Or maybe it's even we get a great showing somehow, some way we get Filip Hedl back. It seems like he's healthy again. That would be incredible. So I think, like you said, the Rangers are peaking at the right time. That's always a good thing going into the playoffs. I do think the Islander win was meaningful. I think the win last night against Ottawa was meaningful. And now the best part is you don't have to face the Islanders. You don't have to face Carolina. You can face one of those lesser teams. Of course, every team in the NHL, especially the teams at the bottom, because they're working so hard just to fight to get that last playoff seed. They're definitely peaking if they make it to the playoffs, right? Because they had to work so hard to get that last seed.
And playoff hockey is as random a sport as there is.
100%. Right? It's a new thing. It doesn't matter. The President's Trophy, like, the President's Trophy is great to celebrate the season that they had, but it doesn't matter anymore. All right, you won the President's Trophy last night. Now it's about the playoffs. You're 0-0. Go into the playoffs and go be great. And talk about Johnny Lazarus. It's so funny because he thought the Rangers were going to take a step back this year, but they didn't, you know? So screw you, Johnny. I'm happy for what's happening this season, and we'll see where it goes.
Well, this weekend, the Knicks play Saturday. The Rangers play Sunday. And I'm sure the Knicks are going to play Monday and Tuesday, and it's going to just be an awesome, awesome weekend. I mean, I said a couple of months ago, I forget what the context was, is that the Knicks, or I should say New York sports, could be entering a dark, dark decade. I forget what it was. And the last couple of years have basically thrown that in my face and then some. This is going to be a fun, fun spring in New York. We need this, all right? People like us, we need this, okay? Yes, having hope sometimes is the scariest thing because it's going to hurt so bad if it doesn't go our way. But we need this, and I cannot wait to be absolutely tuned in. It's going to be basically every other night. I'm going to need the blood pressure medication. It's a lot of sweating, a lot of headaches, but it's going to be awesome. And Rami, thank you so much for giving me your time today. You do awesome, awesome work. I appreciate you. And let's go, Knicks. Let's go, Rangers. Let's have ourselves a spring in New York City.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. Thank you. And yeah, 1994 all over again. Let's do it. And like you said, the blood pressure medication, load up on that because it's going to be every single night. Playoff hockey as it is, we know it's like that. And the Knicks, I mean, these are the heart attack Knicks, cardiac kids, whatever you want to call them. Let's hope it's a fun ride. And I think it's going to be.
I'll let you go on this last question. How do you watch games? What's your setup for a big game? Because, you know, some people, you know, everybody's got their own ways of doing it. How do you do it?
You know, it's interesting. Since I got into this industry, it's funny. My father always tells me also, he's like, you're not available to watch games with anymore. He's like, it feels like you're always at the studio. So last year for the Rangers playoffs, I was in an office at Major League Baseball watching the games with a million Devils fans because it was an office in New Jersey. Ugh. And it was awful. So that was the worst. So this year is going to be better than that. So I'll probably either be at WFAN or I'll be at home watching the games. I like to watch the game. If I'm not in the arena, I like to watch the game alone in my apartment. Sometimes even with the TV on mute, depending on who's on the broadcast. If it's Mike and Clyde, I'll have the sound on. But if it's, you know, God knows who, the ESPN.
Doris Burke and Mark Jones miss me with that. I'm muting that. It's the worst telecast in sports.
No. Not as bad as Sean McDonough on ESPN. If it's Sean McDonough doing the ESPN national call, that shit's going to be on mute for sure. You know, maybe I'll listen to Kenny Albert on the radio and put it on next to the TV or Don LaGreca, whoever's doing the radio call, or hopefully we get the ESPN B team, right? The B squad, I think, is better than the A squad. Obviously with Bob Wischusen, and I think he's as good as it gets as far as broadcasters. So yeah, I'm going to be sitting at home biting my fingernails and probably drinking a little bit and eating just to, you know, have fun. I remember in the playoffs in 22, I was like hiding behind a wall, like leaning into my living room, watching the Rangers. And then when Vetrano scores that goal to tie it at 1-1 in game 6 against Tampa, all of a sudden I'm running around the living room, sat back down. And then within 2 seconds, Tampa scored again. So that's how it works.
Who missed the open net? Cause I was there.
Who do you think missed the open net? I'll give you one guess.
It's such
Ryan Strome, you idiot. Yes, it's always Ryan Strome.
The open net at 1-1 late in the third period. I was sitting.
Ryan Strome always misses the open net. That's what he's done.
I was sitting there and it was horrible. And but normally when I'm not able to go and you know, being able to go to a game is, you know, a tremendous privilege that, you know, I don't have access to that kind of stuff all the time.
Oh, we don't either, by the way. WFAN is blackballed from MSG. So,
Not surprising. James Dolan, you know.
Yeah, whatever. There you go. I didn't say anything.
I can't watch with a lot of people. I can't watch with a, you know, with, you know, certain people. I got to just be like, in seclusion where it's just like, you know, maybe some family members, but
if my father's there, I can watch it. I can't like, there are certain fans, like I have certain fan friends who I could watch. Like I have friends growing up that we watch every Jet playoff game, every Yankee playoff game together. So I could watch with him and his dad. There's certain people that I can watch with. There's a lot of people I can't watch with, and most people I can't. So, you know, if you give me the vape pen and let me sit on my couch and let me just, you know, kind of get in that Zen mode a little bit relaxed, that's the best way to do it.
Well, let's hope that we have a relaxing spring, a cardiac inducing relaxing spring. I know that's a little bit of an oxymoron, but you know what I'm talking about. Rami Lavi, this was awesome. Thanks so much. Obviously, we look forward to this weekend, and all the best, bud.
Appreciate the time, buddy. See you later.
Thanks again to recurring guest Rami Lavi for coming on to talk all things New York playoffs, Knicks, Rangers. It was a really fun time. This is going to be a really fun spring, New York sports fans. A really, really fun spring, and I can't wait for it. It's been 30 years since 1994. Let's have ourselves a repeat of that. And with that said, that's episode 251 for The Love of the Game. Take us out. Ja Rule.
The purple is in the air. And I'm not cocky. I'm confident. So when you tell me I'm the best, it's a compliment.
I got 100 guns, 100 clips. I'm from New York, New York.
And you could tell the way the homies spit. Then I'm from New York, New York.
I got 100 guns, 100 clips. I'm from New York, New York.
I got a semi-automatic that spits next time if you talk.
Hey. And this is how we do.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.